The Volume.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There's no better place to bet the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. I bet on FanDuel as often and as comfortably as I possibly can. It is America's number one sportsbook. It's easy to use. It's safe and secure. There are fast payouts in as quick as 2 hours. So many bet types. Same game parlay bets, live betting, player props, futures, and so much more. If you are new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started right now. Sign up with the promo code BOXING so they know I sent you.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back. Another episode, Boxing with Chris Mannix, part of the Volume Sports Podcast Network. Got a good show for you today. Sergio Mora, former junior middleweight champion, my broadcast partner over at DAZN. He joins me. We are both in Manchester, New Hampshire for the Demetrius Andrade Jason Quigley middleweight title fight. We talk about Canelo Alvarez, some news there. Terrence Crawford, big fight for him against Sean Porter this weekend. And Andrade, 3 years into his middleweight championship reign, is he ever going to get a significant fight? A little bit later on, Bud Crawford himself, he joins the show. We talk about his preparation for the Crawford fight, his feelings on fighting a guy who he's pretty close friends with, and what is his future beyond this Porter fight? Is there going to be one with Top Rank? Might he go over to the PBC? I asked Terrence Crawford about that and much more. As always, best way to support this podcast, get over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, on to the show. All right. Are you ready?
I am prepared.
You're not. Like, we've been in Manchester for like 3 hours, and all you've done is complain.
Well, there's a lot to complain about here in Manchester, New Hampshire. First of all, everything ends by 8 p.m. There's no Latinos. Then there's no fun around here.
You have individually increased the diversity by 17%.
I have. I've made this place cooler and more colorful.
I definitely have done that. But you've also been griping, hungry, belly aching, all this. I mean,
I hate the cold, Mannix. I hate the cold.
It's like 65 degrees out there.
I hate the cold.
Okay. All right. We are in Manchester, the site of Demetrius Andrade's middleweight title defense against Jason Quigley. We're going to talk about that fight, but can we address off the top, Andrade?
He punked you.
He went at me in the fighter meeting.
He punked you. Demetrius Andrade punked his number one fanboy, Chris Mannix, at the fighter meeting and straight let him have him. He was ripping you apart. I would have stopped the fight if you were a referee.
I don't get it.
If I was a referee, I would have stopped the fight.
Why is he ripping me apart?
I don't know. Maybe
he's angry. He's angry that after Jaime Munguia won last week, I didn't push for Munguia versus Andrade. When the reality is, Sergio, I've done that like a dozen times. Like, in the ring with Jaime Munguia, I have asked him about Demetrius Andrade. I don't do it one time, and all of a sudden, Demetrius Andrade turns on me. Like, what is that?
Hey, listen, he's disloyalty. You're used to that.
You're accustomed to disloyalty.
You're accustomed to not being
loyal
to anybody, but I love the fact. I think everyone in that room loved the fact that he was tearing you to shreds.
It doesn't make any sense, though. I have been his strongest advocate. There is nobody out there calling for Demetrius Andrade to be in big fights more than I am. Moreover, there is nobody out there that spends as much time around him outside of fights. I've been to Miami, where he's trained. I've been to Providence several times. I've written about him extensively. Nobody else in the national media is paying more attention to Demetrius Andrade. He shows up at the fighter meeting and slaps me around.
I wish you would have had this passion when he was punking
me. I was mystified.
Dude, you're yelling at me. This is the way you should have spoke to Andrade. But
I
instead, you tucked tail.
Okay.
And you
I did not
didn't know how to react because Andrade was chewing you apart. He was slapping you around.
I thought he was kidding at first, but he wasn't.
No, he had a chip on his shoulder and he let you have it.
You love that chip on his shoulder.
I loved it. Everyone there loved him slapping you around.
All right. We're going to talk about Demetrius Andrade. He fights Jason Quigley
and
Friday.
Run.
Okay. I did not tuck tail and run. Friday on DAZN. But first, Sergio, the big news outside the ring this week, Canelo Alvarez has set his sights on another opponent, and it's not a champion at 160. It's not a contender at 168. It's not a title holder at 175. It is Junior Makabu, the 100, or I was going to put a 200-pound, the cruiserweight champion of the WBC. So he fights it right around 190 pounds now, which I guess is the new WBC rule. Canelo wants to move up and fight for a cruiserweight title, which if he wins, will give him a championship in a fifth weight class. What was your reaction to Canelo's big announcement?
Well, I had to look up who this, how do you say his name?
Makabu.
Makabu. I had to look up his name, his resume, and then I realized that, he picked up a strap. Canelo's chasing history. So you got to give him credit for that. He's chasing history. He already became the first Mexican super middleweight champion to do that in history. So now he wants to become the first Mexican five-division world champion. I mean, you've had guys like Jorge Arce and
Morales,
Barrera. Yeah. So
all the greats.
You've had great champions do it in four divisions, but to be the first in five, that's special. So this is just something that he's chasing greatness. He's chasing a record. It's not going to be a fan-friendly fight. I'm sure people, are still going to flock to it because it's Canelo, but it does nothing for the average boxing fan, and I doubt that it'll do big numbers. But history-wise, when you look back at this and you look at Canelo and everything he did, for all the haters that he has, for all the people that say that he'll never amount to Chavez, I mean, you look at the resume, you look at the record, you see what he did from winning titles from 147 all the way to 200 or 190, whatever it is.
Yep.
Come on, man. You're not going to be able to doubt that for 10, 15, 20 years from now. When you look back in hindsight, Canelo is going to be the greatest Mexican fighter, and then you're going to say one of the greatest ever, period.
So I don't like this fight for a few reasons. I respect Canelo for wanting to do this. Say what you want about Makabu, but he can crack. And you're talking about a fighter that is topped out at 175 just once, going up to 190-ish and fighting a cruiserweight with real power. That's that. So I respect Canelo for doing that. But here's why I don't like it. One, cruiserweight's not sexy. Like, Roy Jones going from light heavyweight to heavyweight, that was sexy. Like, becoming the heavyweight champion was something. Cruiserweight is basically a way station of weight classes. It is a pit stop for a lot of fighters on their way to heavyweight. Alexander Usyk popped in, won four titles, left, became the heavyweight champion. I think you'd agree, a much better deal that Usyk is the unified heavyweight champion than he was as undisputed cruiserweight champion. That's number one. Number two, he's fighting a real fighter with real power, but he's not fighting the best at cruiserweight. The best at cruiserweight right now is Marius Brides. Marius Brides is the guy that won the World Boxing Super Series, who is, as we speak, the number one cruiserweight in the world. I'd probably like it a little bit more if he was challenging Marius Brides. This, to me, feels like how Canelo challenged Kovalev for that light heavyweight title. Kovalev was the biggest name at light heavyweight, but nobody would say Kovalev was the biggest or the biggest star, or he was the biggest star, the best fighter, I should say, at light heavyweight. So I don't love the choice of opponents going up to cruiserweight. It feels like he's selecting this guy for a very specific reason. Most importantly, though, we kind of saw this song play out back in 2003, Sergio, because Roy Jones moved up to heavyweight, beat John Ruiz, pinnacle moment of his career, becoming heavyweight champion. But then he had to go back down, and that wasn't good for him. Now, I've heard the argument that Roy Jones was past his prime anyway, that Antonio Tarver was going to catch up to him no matter what. Tarver did, two fights later, stopping Roy Jones. But Roy has often said that the weight cut hurt him. So Canelo going from 168 in this last fight to, let's say, 185, 186 to go up and fight Makabu, coming back down, which he's going to do. He's not going to stay at cruiserweight. Coming back down, I got to feel that would cost him. So you're a fighter. Like, what do you think of that? Do you believe there's truth to the argument that cutting that much weight coming back down will be a problem?
First of all, before you started this whole harangue, is that the word?
No, it's not the word. All right.
You said the word sexy, and it just doesn't sound right coming out of your mouth. But yeah, you're right. It's not appealing.
Yes.
It's not appealing to go all the way up and fight a nobody that nobody really knows just to pick up a belt and take a calculated risk to become a five division world champion. But history doesn't remember that. History just remembers what you put on paper. Did you or did you not move up all the way to cruiserweight to pick up a strap? Yes, you did. Did Roy Jones Jr. beat a heavyweight? Did he start his career at middleweight and beat a heavyweight? Yes, he did. Did he go back down, get knocked out, and then everything else? Yeah, if you really want to look at the
win was the beginning of the end, basically.
I get it, but there's risk in moving up in weight, especially when you're skipping weight divisions, especially when you're going all the way to the 200-plus level. There's a lot of risk there. The slight change in risk here is the fact that cruiserweight, I think they're going to want to fight at 190. That makes a big difference. The 10 pounds is going to make a huge difference for a fighter like Canelo.
Sure.
5'8". He can't carry 200 pounds. I would think that Canelo
Makabu's
would come
not huge either, though. He's 6 foot. Canelo fought several guys that are bigger than him.
He's not tall, but
he's sturdier.
He's kind of really thick. Yeah. When I watched him fight, he reminds me of Adonis Stevenson, a huge punching light heavyweight who was a southpaw. They have a similar record as well, 28 wins, 3 losses around there, similar knockout ratio. Big left hand, only Stevenson was a lot faster and I think better. This is just a calculated risk to pick up another division. There is risk anytime you move up, but he already proved that he could go up to light heavyweight and come back down to 168. Can he do that with a heavyweight going up to the 190 and coming back down to super middleweight or light heavyweight? I don't know. I think he's young enough to do it. He's sturdy enough to do it. And the main thing is he believes he can do it. So we ultimately don't matter.
Yeah. And Canelo's earned the right to do whatever he wants. All the people out there saying Canelo doesn't face the best, and Demetrius Andrade is one of them, go to bed. Like, that's just not real. Canelo has cleaned out the super middleweight division in 11 months. David Benavidez is out there, but let's not act like David Benavidez is this world beater that Canelo was avoiding, right? David Benavidez has not faced any top opponents as a super middleweight. So that's
Jarrell,
a fight that can happen.
You got to give Jarrell his due, especially coming
Jarrell's
after a big win.
But he's okay.
Former champion.
You're right. Former champion. That's probably his best win.
Right,
no question. Canelo can do whatever he wants. But I still think there are more interesting fights for him in that 168-pound weight class. Beginning with Gennady Golovkin.
This isn't about interesting. This isn't about sexy. This is about history. That's all it is. He wants to move up to become the first to ever win a championship in five divisions. It's just to check that name off the box and put your names in the mix of Thomas Hearns.
Right.
He was, I think, one of the first ones to do five divisions.
I forget if he was the only one or one of a handful to go 154 to 175.
Yes,
first,
that's what I'm saying.
First,
because Sugar Ray Leonard did it, but he kind of did
47.
It.
47. Hearns went to 47 to 75.
Yeah, but Sugar Ray Leonard did it, but he did it in a kind of cheating fashion because he won the
super middleweight
and a light heavyweight at the same time.
And Donnie Long came down in that fight.
Yeah, but he won two divisions in one fight. That's not how you're
right.
supposed
yeah,
to do it.
Exactly
so right. This will be doing it the legitimate way, and that's how you make history. And when you look back in hindsight, you're just saying, how the hell did this Mexican, this great Mexican, this 5'8", go all the way to cruiserweight at 200 pounds and win a title? That's
okay,
all you're going to remember.
Let me run this by you, though. I'm all for making history like that. I think it's great. But what if Canelo waited until, say, June of 2022? And what if Alexander Usyk winds up beating Anthony Joshua
again? Get Usyk
again
out of your head. Usyk will be a nightmare for Canelo.
Okay.
Usyk is everything you don't want to face Canelo. He has the faster feet. He's the bigger fighter. He's going to punch harder. He's going to be faster. He has the technique. He has the fight IQ. He has the amateur background. What the hell do you want? Canelo's bound to get beat by somebody. You're just adding too much to the list of qualifications that you need to fight Canelo. Usyk is just way beyond that. This guy is like Lomachenko in a heavyweight division. No. Canelo stays away from Usyk.
There would have to be a catchweight for a fight like
that. No, that doesn't make sense. That would be stupidity. Ask any matchmaker. That would be career suicide for Canelo to fight a Usyk.
So you don't think he could win?
No.
Okay. But
I think he doesn't win. I think he looks bad. I think it's a bad step. Everything that's negative, that's what Canelo's going to find out there.
Isn't that chasing history? Isn't
fighting
it'll be
Mikey
for the unified heavyweight championship?
It'll be Mikey Ortiz getting routed by Errol Spence. That's exactly what that fight would look like. I'm sorry, Mikey Garcia. Get just shellacked. That's a word that you used.
I do.
What's that other one they use that sounds like a... That I say Todd Grisham should say that word?
I don't know. It's unclear. Look, maybe he gets beat, but that would be cool, man. Like Canelo Alvarez going for the heavyweight championship against maybe the only fighter he could come close to competing against, Usyk, just a year removed or a year plus removed from being the cruiserweight champion of the world. Like, I get it. He'd be a big underdog. But that would be chasing history. Much more history than fighting Makabu for a belt nobody cares about. Like, that's... He would be a five-division champion, but, like, what's... I'll use this word again. What's sexier? Being the heavyweight champion or being the cruiserweight champion?
Slobber knocker. That was the
slobber
word.
Slobber knocker, that's the word. That's good, that you're answering a question from 5 minutes ago.
Listen, to become the heavyweight champion, that's still the best... what do they call it? The best award in sports to be the heavyweight champion.
There's only been one Mexican heavyweight champion. That was Andy Ruiz.
No, but
he did
it's still
for a minute
and a
half.
The highest prize in
I agree.
Sports.
I'm agreeing
the
with you.
The highest prize in boxing to this day in sport. I'm sorry, in sports is still being the heavyweight champion of the world. This yes. is something where it's Muhammad Ali, it's Jack Johnson, it's Legacy, Joe Louis, and Canelo Alvarez. I mean, of course, I've
hey,
been
you
chasing
think,
history.
If you think if Canelo handles Makabu without, you know, getting hit a lot and looking bad, you think in his head he's not going to go, I could go to heavyweight, I could face Usyk. I promise you, somewhere in Team Canelo's camp with Eddie Reynoso, who said Canelo fights well against heavyweights, Frank Sanchez, Andy Ruiz, the guys are in that camp. Canelo looks good against him. Somewhere in the back of Eddie Reynoso's brain, he is thinking Canelo could be heavyweight champion.
Man, listen, I can't comprehend that kind of thinking, that kind of greatness. No one can, but only Canelo understands what he could do inside that ring. And we know that he can fight men a lot bigger than him, and he could still carry that power. But to heavyweight, I think it's just a bad decision, a bad choice, a bad move. Usyk is a terrible. That's career suicide, in my opinion.
It's not career suicide. If he loses, he loses.
It'll be a Mikey Garcia or Earl Spence type fight.
Maybe.
Or it'll be something like that where it's just he shouldn't have done
Usyk,
it. It was a bad decision.
You know?
It was a bad decision. He shouldn't have done it. He bit off way more than he could chew. And this is what we ask of a great fighter. You got to take the other challenge. You got to take the next step.
Like
you got to go to the next level.
Don't act
and
like
we force them. We force them to have to go to heavyweight, to have to
nobody's forcing him to
appease critics like you.
Don't
slobber
do
knocker.
He's the one. Stop saying slobber knocker. It's not about critics like me pushing him to heavyweight. He's already going to cruiserweight. So if he's already going to cruiserweight, maybe you go a few extra pounds more and you take on the heavyweight champion of the world in the most significant fight in Mexican boxing history. You agree with that? That would be the most significant fight in Mexican boxing history.
Curiosity killed the cat, and in this case, curiosity will kill Canelo's career, in my opinion.
All right, let's move on. On Saturday, Bud Crawford will take on the biggest challenge of his welterweight career when he takes on Sean Porter in the rare top rank PBC crossover. Bud Crawford is the favorite in this fight. Tell me, what kind of chance are you giving Sean Porter in this one?
You talk about Sean Porter. You're talking about a man that's only lost to champions and by split decision, majority decision. Now, Cal Brook, I think it wasn't a close fight, but it was still a competitive fight, and it was early in his career. Anything or anyone that weighs 147 pounds, Sean Porter can beat or compete against, including Terrence Crawford, who is arguably the best fighter pound for pound in the world. And the reason he'll do it, not only because he has that manhandling style, but the switching back and forth from lefty to righty won't throw him off because Sean Porter does that. He does it in a wrestling fashion. Errol Spence said he struggled. Well, not struggled, but he called him a street fighter. Called him a tough guy and a street fighter. That's what you need against a style like Bud Crawford. Whenever you have perfection, you beat it by being imperfect. You know, you need imperfection to beat someone that's so just unflawed and clean and mean like Bud Crawford. So you need a tough guy, a wrestler, a mauler, a brawler. You need a Sean Porter. I think this is going to be just another one of these Sean Porter type fights where he will hurt Crawford. He will get his respect. Crawford will probably win, but after the fight, Crawford, like Spence, will say, man, that was a lot tougher than I thought. This guy is a real deal, and that's why Porter is always exciting to watch.
Well, I think that's the key, right? Can Porter muck it up in the same way he did in the losses to Keith Thurman, to Errol Spence, and the same way he did in wins over Danny Garcia was a big one for him. Can he make it the kind of wrestling match he needs it to be to win this fight? Or is Crawford so good and so technically proficient that he catches him on one of those rushes? That's how, if I'm remembering correctly,
that's how Spence caught him.
Spence caught him,
with
right?
The right hook, right check hook.
And I think as good as Spence is, and he's great with the jab, uses his size, Crawford's faster. And I think Crawford's more explosive with some of these shots. So I think coming in, that's a big risk for Sean Porter. He's got to be real careful he doesn't walk into a bomb. But if he's able to wrestle with Crawford and maybe tire him a little bit, he's going to be the physically bigger fighter in the ring. He's a career welterweight, basically. And I think he was at middleweight in the
amateurs. He fought Danny Jacobs in the amateurs.
Yeah, big guy.
And beat him, I think.
So I think if he's able to do that, he's going to give himself half a chance. I just think Crawford's so good, man. Like, Crawford is so, so talented that as long as he hasn't lost a step, that what we saw against the likes of Mean Machine, where he got dropped, even though it wasn't called, if as long as he's at the peak of his power, I think he's going to catch Sean Porter with something big. I think this fight ends in a stoppage with Crawford winning.
Can you really imagine anyone stopping a Mack truck like Porter? I don't think anyone stops him.
He won't
at 147.
Quit.
No one stops Sean Porter at 147, including Terrence Crawford, because Crawford's moving up in weight. If you look at them,
he moved up in weight, what, 3 years ago. And Crawford was telling me this
Crawford's
week.
Crawford's not a big guy.
He's a
thin, very strong fighter. I've seen him in person,
right?
And he's more muscular than I thought.
It's not the same, but you remember how Crawford won his title against Jeff Horn? Jeff Horn tried to make it a street fight, too. Crawford didn't have any of that. He was battering him around towards the end.
Jeff Horn is no Sean Porter.
He's not Sean Porter's league. I get that, but he tried to make it physical. Jeff Horn successfully did that against Manny Pacquiao. Like, that's how he won his title over in Australia. He's been able to do it at a reasonably high level. Crawford wouldn't let him. Crawford's too good.
Too great. Choose your words right.
You
writer.
The one.
Great.
Okay.
Bud Crawford is, we're watching greatness. I mean, what he does is so hard to do, and he does it so effortlessly. And the way they've been letting him be himself, you know, just fight whatever style he wants from whatever position, whatever stance. He's a mean, mean fighter, and he can box and sit back and pick you apart. But Porter makes guys like that, you know, look human. So Sean Porter definitely has a chance to muck this up, like you would say. But to win, I think that's a little bit out of his reach. We know what Sean Porter is on the elite level with the Thurmans and the Spences, and this is just another one of those fights.
So this is Crawford's last contracted fight with Top Rank. If you were him, what would you do?
I already told you this on Jabs. On our show,
not
I told you.
Everybody listens to, or they should watch it every Tuesday and
well,
Thursday.
Listen, well, I'll repeat it. I'm gonna regurgitate exactly what I say on that show. I'm not sure if that was a word.
It's not is.
I'm going to recant.
No,
that's
not
the word.
That means
see, you're throwing me off. I'm gonna repeat what I said on the show.
Third time's the charm.
Any great fighter, if you think all the great fighters in the past 20 years that have made the most amount of money have ventured off from being champions with a promoter to making their own promotional company. Golden Boy Promotions with Oscar De La Hoya, Mayweather Promotions with Floyd Mayweather. Cotto did it in his own fashion as well. I think that's what Bud Crawford needs to do. Well, Canelo, of course. Bud Promotions. That's what needs to happen when he becomes a free agent. Bud Promotions in association with whatever promoter they're going to work with. And then that's how he makes the money he wants. That's how he still has the control and he still has the finger on the button. And that's how he gets paid and makes that pound for pound money that he's looking for. Bud Promotions.
And he's 34 years old. He's at that point where he should be doing that. He should be going fight by fight or no more than a 2-fight contract. Canelo Alvarez is proof that it works. And before that, Miguel Cotto did it successfully in the twilight of his career.
A lot of fighters have done it. There haven't been many successful fighters that have
well,
done
yeah,
it.
Well, yeah, guys get
I mean,
cut.
Sugar Ray Leonard tried promoting. I mean, so
no,
many,
Sugar Ray Leonard actually was smart,
Evander
too.
Evander Holyfield tried to promote.
Sugar
I mean,
Ray Leonard
Roy Jones Jr. is a promoter, but yeah, successfully.
Roy Jones Jr. for a while tied himself to HBO, and like, you know, that's basically the same as tying yourself to a promoter. I think these fighters, the top ones, should be as free as they could possibly be. You know a young guy that's doing it that I love? Boots Ennis. Boots Ennis is not tied
Smart.
To anybody.
Smart.
And he's fighting regularly on Showtime. He's getting paid. He's rising the rankings, so he's going to get a title shot no matter what. Boots Ennis is, if he stays the course on this, is going to put himself in position where he can ping pong between Matchroom, Top Rank, PBC, wherever those big fights are. It takes some balls to do that, Sergio, because there's guaranteed money you're leaving on the table when you don't sign with
any great business decision ever made was scary, and that's how you maximize you know, the money that's on the table by taking chances, taking risks. Any billionaire would tell you that. You need risk and balls.
Yeah,
you would know you come from you know, money.
Okay, once again, I don't come from money.
Privilege,
for the 9,000th time, I don't come from
generational
money.
Boston money.
Generational Boston wealth. Maybe you should have thought about that before you signed a rematch clause with Forrest, okay? Maybe that's what you should have thought of.
I'm incorporated. Latin Snake Promotions. That's my corporation.
Great. You have any fighters?
No.
All right. Let's finish with Demetrius Andrade against Jason Quigley. You heard Sergio at the fighter meeting. Andrade, he blames everybody for his lack of notable fights. He has been the middleweight champion for over 3 years now, and he has yet to have a signature fight. His last fight, a win over Liam Williams, was broadcast in the afternoon on Saturday. This coming fight against Jay Quigley, very good fighter, one loss on his resume, coming off the biggest win of his career with Shane Mosley Jr., but it's not the marquee fight against Gennady Golovkin, against Jermall Charlo, against Jaime Munguia. Why? Answer this question. Why has Demetrius Andrade had such a hard time getting fights?
Because Demetrius Andrade is too damn good. He's too damn left-handed. He's too damn experienced. He's too damn disciplined. He's too damn skilled. Name one. But everything starts with too damn, because he's that good. He's that avoided. And he doesn't take chances. I mean, he's disciplined. He doesn't take chances, and he's a southpaw. So he'll pick you apart from that southpaw stance, and he won't. He can knock you down. He can hurt you, but he'll go after the knockout for a little bit. If he doesn't gets it, he goes back on the stick and gets back on cruise control. That's discipline. You might call it boring. And you know what? If you want the big fights, you're going to have to get out of that element. So, you know, I think he realizes that now, but he puts it back on cruise control. And it takes so much discipline for a fighter who has a fighter down. He has a fighter hurt multiple times in the first two or three rounds, for him not to go for the knockout, because you don't get paid for overtime. You don't get paid for rounds. Get the job done and get out of here. And that's how you get the big fights. But Andrade, he's already satisfied. He's already content with what he made of his career. He's in his 30s now. He's made a lot of money, especially with Matchroom and especially with DAZN in the later part of his career. He's held down to that championship without beating any champions. Think about that. He's a world champion. He's defended it multiple times, but he hasn't faced one world champion. If you ask any fighter, what do you want to be when? What do you want to get out of boxing? Well, I want to become a champion. Check. Andre did it. What do you want to do? Well, I want to make millions of dollars. Check. Andre did it. What else do you want to do? Well, I want to fight the best. That is not checked on Andre's part. But other than that, he's having a hell of a career, and he's laughing all the way to the bank, and he's going to go down as a two-division champion, maybe even undefeated and unblemished.
But
he's not going to have that name on his resume, and that bothers every fighter.
That bothers him a lot. Because
not for nothing, man. It's not for nothing. I'm not comparing myself to anybody, but shit, man, I got two Hall of Famers on my resume. I fought the great Shane Mosley, and I fought the great Vernon Forrest. So not for nothing. You got people could, you know, look at my career. Oh, he's a pretender. He's a contender. He didn't hold on to the title long. Hey, man, but I went 1-1-1 with two Hall of Famers. So at least people are going to associate me with a reality show and two great fighters. So that's what he's missing, that association with a great fighter or with a great name. And we all need that B-side. He doesn't have it.
Demetrius Andrade is one of the most avoided fighters in boxing history. And that might sound hyperbolic, but look at some of the other guys of this era that have been avoided. Arislandi Lara was avoided for a lot of years.
Southpaw.
But Lara got a fight with Canelo. That was a huge opportunity for him. Guillermo Rigondeaux.
Southpaw.
Avoided for a lot of years. But eventually, he got that huge showdown with Vasily Lomachenko. You can go back even further. Pernell Whitaker was a guy that was avoided by a lot of fighters over the years. Got his opportunity, though, against Oscar De La Hoya, among others. Demetrius Andrade has not gotten that opportunity. That, to me, is in some ways inexplainable, because Andrade, while he is a southpaw and extremely talented, has a belt and he's got money behind him. You are going to make a career-high purse if you face Demetrius Andrade. Eddie Hearn allegedly made an offer to Jermall Charlo for $7 million to fight Demetrius Andrade, and he turned that down. That is wild to me. I can't fathom a fighter doing that when so much money and prestige is on the table. All that being said, Sergio.
Career high purse, having to deal with a southpaw curse.
Okay. But
that's why these guys rather look in another direction, because, I mean, outlaw should be banned or outlawed. That's what Mickey said from Rocky.
Southpaw
should be outlawed. And that holds true. That line was written in the 80s by Sylvester Stallone, and it still holds true now, especially southpaws with an Olympic pedigree. Now, if Andrade fought like Rocky Balboa, you bet everyone would be running towards that belt, but he doesn't.
Well, there's my follow-up here. Andrade has been his own worst enemy. If Andrade's fight against Walter Cauton Dacqua ends in the fourth round, it's a different story. If Andrade's fight against Maciek Sileski ends in the second round, which it could have, it's a different story. If Andrade's win over Luke Keeler
Liam
ended
Williams
in the first round.
I get it,
but
yeah.
I'm just naming those three. Luke Keeler, Andrade had him down, what, like 15 seconds into the fight? If he had put Keeler down and out in the first round, it's a different story. You know why Gabe Rosado earned the fight with Jaime Munguia? Not because he beat Bektimir Malakuziev. Because
knockout of
him.
The year.
He flattened him with a knockout of the year type of fight. Maybe there was a little bit of luck to that punch, but he knocked him out, and that's why he got the fight against Jaime Munguia. I know you agree with me that if Andrade went for more knockouts and picked up more knockouts, we would be talking about a completely different career path. He would have gotten at least one or maybe more of the signature fights.
I agree with you there, but I don't agree with you that, there's no luck in boxing. There's no lucky shots. Rosado timed that.
I mean, there are lucky shots. There's
not. And you know nothing about luck or fighting. But Andrade, on the other hand, he does know about boxing, and he does know about being lucky, because he's unblemished up to this career. He's been a U.S. Olympian. He's been a world champion in two divisions.
So where's
luck
after any of that?
He's making millions of dollars. And you know what? He's following the right game plan. No, he made his own luck. He made his own luck, and right now he's making his own decisions, and they're just not going his way on the elite level.
Okay, so make yourself Andrade's manager here. Against Jason Quigley, what do you want to see him do?
Well, Quigley has been stopped by a fighter that switches in Tiriano Johnson. I think he was nailing him with overhand lefts and rights from a southpaw stance. We have a bigger, taller southpaw, natural southpaw in Andrade, who slings his shots as well. So I would say start fast like he normally does. And when he catches Quigley and rocks him, go for the stoppage. Now, this is going to be a little bit dangerous, because Quigley is an excellent boxer puncher with heavy hands and amateur pedigree as well. So he'll love that opportunity to catch Andrade, going for the finish. Just like Andy Lee, who's now in his corner, did when he won the championship, or against Korobov. He rocked him when he got rocked. So yeah, anytime you're dealing with a fighter with a lot of experience and with power behind him, they have that lucky. Well, I'm sorry, not that
See,
lucky.
See, you said it. That's the word you just
you're
used.
You're lucky I said it. No, they have that one bullet in the chamber.
Yeah. Look, if he comes out with the same success early on that he had against Cauton Dacqua and Keeler and Suletsky and several other fighters along the way, he's got to close the show. Like, he has got to make concerted effort. This has to be his statement. Because one thing that works for Andrade, I think, is that if Canelo is really serious about fighting at cruiserweight, all of a sudden, all those guys that have been kind of waiting for that Canelo lottery ticket, they're looking for something else. Golovkin, if he beats Barada, he's available. Jaime Munguia, going into 2022, he's available. And yes, Jermall Charlo, who has become kind of the Gary Russell of middleweights, like fighting once a year.
That's pretty good.
He is available. And if Andrade goes out and blasts out Jason Quigley, there is going to be momentum for him to get a big fight early in 2022. But if he winds up winning, Sergio, like 119-109 or 120-108, it's not going to help him. It's not going to help him get those fights that he wants. I know it's boxing, and Andrade says all the time, like, are you going to come visit me in the hospital when you try to ask him about going for knockouts? But you can't get those big fights unless you go for knockouts.
I'm going to make a prediction here, man. Okay. Judging, now we're just getting off the fighter meetings where he just, you know, shellacked you verbally in the fighter meeting.
He did.
So
I'm not denying that.
So
slap me around.
Judging off that chip on the shoulder that we've seen in the fighter meetings, which we've never seen, and judging off the fact that he needs so much pressure, judging all that criticism and that even those memes they made of Canelo after he invaded the press conference, all that has been brewing inside of Andrade. And now that he's in his hometown, well, near his hometown with his hometown fans. He's going to have 6,000-7,000 people here or more.
Yeah, they'll be mostly Irish fans. What are you talking about?
A lot of people rooting against him, but whatever. He's going to have a lot of people cheering, and I'm going to make a bold prediction. He's going to go out of his element to try to stop a fighter that has only been stopped one time, and that's what I think is going to be his coming out party as the bad guy. We're going to see Bubu as the bad guy, not that likable, it's me again, and coming out being promoter and funny. We've seen a bad guy now. Today in the fighter meetings, we've seen Scarface, man. We've seen, hello, say hello to my, say hello to the bad guy. Come on. It's the last time you're going to see a bad guy like him again. And I think we've seen that metamorphosis. Ooh, I like that word. That transition into Bubu, the two-time champion and nice guy, clean cut, it's me again, to that, nah, fuck this. I want everybody, and I'm going to invade everyone's fighter meetings, and I'm going to start tonight near my hometown by taking care of this Quigley guy in spectacular fashion.
If he's as angry at Quigley as he was at me earlier today, he's going to have a good night. That's for sure. Sergio, you go have a good night.
Say hello to my little friend.
When we come back, my conversation with Terrence Crawford. With big fights every week, there's never been a better time to give FanDuel Sportsbook a shot and join the action on FanDuel Fight Nights. Because right now, you can place your first bet risk-free. That's right, you'll get up to $1,000 back if you don't win. FanDuel gives you so many bets to choose from. There are parlays, round props, method of victory bets, and so much more. Let me give you my best bet of the week. That is Demetrius Andrade stopping Jason Quigley. Andrade, not known for picking up knockouts, but I think he gets the job done, finishes Jason Quigley, picks up a knockout. Offers like this are just one of the many reasons I love betting on FanDuel. It is the number one rated sportsbook app in America. It's easy to use, it's safe and secure, and there are fast payouts. The app, so easy. And when you win, you get paid in as little as 2 hours. With FanDuel in your corner, you'll always get exclusive odd boosts, great promotions, and so much more to make your FanDuel Fight Night even more exciting. That's why they're America's number one sportsbook. Sign up with the promo code BOXING to bet risk-free up to $1,000 on FanDuel Sportsbook. Download FanDuel today. That's promo code BOXING. All right, Terrence Crawford is here. 147-pound title holder on November 20th. He will step in the ring against Sean Porter, defend his belt in what many people see as the biggest fight of Crawford's career. Welterweight, at least, maybe the biggest fight of his career to date. What do you think about that, bud? Is this the biggest fight of your career?
On paper, they're trying to make it seem like it's the biggest fight of my career, but I can't say it's the biggest fight of my career. Nothing really on the line for me. Everything's on the line for him. So I really can't say this is the biggest fight of my career, no.
You fought some really good guys at multiple weight classes, from 135 pounds to becoming undisputed at 140. If not the biggest fight, do you look at Sean Porter as being your biggest challenge?
Well, you could say that he opposes a lot of challenges in the ring with his fighting style, his speed, his movement, you know, his aggressiveness. So he opposed a lot of challenges in the ring. Yes, he do.
You know, one of the things that was brought up a lot over the last year or so when it came to you and Sean Porter was that you probably wouldn't fight because you're friends. That was kind of a narrative that was out there. How friendly are you with Sean Porter? How would you describe that relationship?
Well, that relationship is on pause. It's on hold. So I'm not even thinking about that, you know, type of relationship right now. That's the guy that I'm going to be facing come November 20th next week. And, you know, we're going to be trying to take each other heads off.
Did that, over the last year or so, when this fight was brought up, did that give you reason for pause, though, to say, you know, I don't know if I want to do this, that guy is a friend of mine?
No, not at all. You know, being that You know, we in the same weight class. You know, he's a top welterweight and I'm a top welterweight. You know, eventually, you know, you're going to have to face each other sooner or later if you both is successful and keep doing what you guys doing. But at the time, you know, I told him I wasn't looking to fight him at the moment, being that, you know, when he got a title, there was never no Sean Porter versus Terrence Crawford. There wasn't even mentioning us two fighting each other, you know. So I kind of felt some type of way, you know. But now that, you know, he don't have a belt and he's looking to be a title holder once again, you know, he's coming for my belt. And, you know, that makes me, you know, a little fired up.
How easy is it for you to just put feelings, as you said, on pause, to put a friendship on pause to prepare to go into to battle with a guy?
Easy. You know, we're good friends, but once you're in the ring, you're not friends. You don't have any friends in the ring. It's just you and that person and the ref that's going to be in the ring come fight night. So all the friend stuff goes out the window.
Do you see it as being similar to what you saw in your own camp just a couple of weeks back with Jamel Herring and Shakur Stevenson being friendly but having to be rivals in the ring?
For sure, for sure. You know, those guys, unlike me and Sean Porter, those guys sparred each other and whatnot before. They trained with each other before, you know, they ran with each other. So this is a different case. You know, me and Sean Porter never trained with each other except when we was amateurs. We never sparred each other. So, you know, all we got is memories when we was kids, but now we adults and now we both in the same division. And now we're going to see, you know, who's the better man come fight night.
You know, you've been, as I said, part of some big fights. This is probably the most, I mean, for as a watcher of your career, Terrence, it's probably the most excited I've been since your 140-pound title undisputed unification fight. Like, do you feel that way at all when, you know, when you're facing an opponent in a fight that there's probably more interest in than many, if not most, of your previous fights?
No, I feel like this is a highly anticipated fight, being that, you know, you got two great fighters going head to head, neither one of them scared of anybody. And, you know, Sean Porter brings it each and every time he steps foot in the ring, and so do I. And everybody want to see how I'm going to react and how I'm going to fare against one of the other top welterweights in the division. So, you know, it's a lot of talk going on about how Terrence is going to look, how Terrence is going to react towards Sean's aggressiveness, and how, you know, strong Sean is and how hard Sean punch. And, you know, there's a lot of questions to be asked. And, you know, come fight night, all the questions will be answered.
How do you think you're going to fare against that style?
I think I'm going to do good. Like I always say, I'm adaptable to any style. You know, I feel like Sean Porter, you know, he's a tremendous talent, you know, and whatnot. But I just think I'm just a better all-around fighter. You know, everything that he can do, I can do too, you know. But I don't think he can do everything that I can do. You know, I think I'm a better, smarter, you know, fighter at the end of the day.
He has a way, and it's his style, as you've seen, to make it physical in there in the ring. Like, he is coming at you. He'll wrestle with you. He'll brawl with you. Have you faced that type of style before? And what's the key to kind of handling that type of opponent?
Well, listen, you know, Jeff Horn was a rough, rugged fighter. You know, Ray Beltran was a rough, rugged fighter. You know, Felix Diaz was a rough, rugged fighter. So, of course, you know, John Molina, you know, so being in the ring with those type of fighters, I didn't seen it all before. You know, Sean might have a little more of this or a little more of that, you know, but it's nothing that I haven't seen before.
This is a cross-promotional fight. Sean Porter, affiliated with PBC. You, of course, with Top Rank. Did you think the day would come when we'd see that happen for you, where you get a cross-promotion against the top welterweight?
Well, it's not a cross promotion, you know. This is a fairly, you know, one promoter promoting our fight, and that's ESPN Top Rank. You know, I don't know if those two could have came together like they did with Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury and made the fight across promotion. But then that, you know, the WBO has demanded the fight, you know, I think, you know, that was the best thing that could have happened.
Yeah, how did you feel about that, Terrence? Like the WBO stepping in and mandating that this fight happen?
Well, at first I was just like, okay, you know what I mean? I'm with whatever, you know, but then, you know, with the 60-40 split, you know, I was like, okay, you know what I mean? That I probably got the bad shake of that deal, being that, you know, the numbers, you know, don't add up. But it is what it is. You know, we're here now, and, you know, we both making a lot of money, and we're going to put on a great show come November 20th.
Do you feel like, or do you hope this is the first of many, maybe you're right, it's not a cross promotion necessarily, but the first of many fights where you fight some of the guys that everybody wants to see you fight?
Yeah, for sure. You know, this is the stepping stone, and, you know, this is what everybody been waiting on, and this is what everybody been calling for, and so have I. You know, I particularly probably haven't been calling for Sean Porter in direct, but all the other guys in PBC, I've been calling for them, and, you know, this is the start of, you know, a bright end of their career.
It's been widely reported, Terrence, that this is the last fight of your top ranked contract. What do you think your future is in 2022?
Well, my future is bright. Like I always said, you know, I'm not thinking about, you know, too much of anything right now, but Sean Porter, you know, he's my top priority. That's on my mind, and everything else can wait till after this fight.
Do you feel like you can get what you want under your current circumstances?
Like I said, you know, this is something that we're going to discuss after the fight. And, you know, we're going to map everything out and see what's best for Terrence Crawford.
So last question for you. How obnoxious is Bo Mack going to be at the weigh-in for this fight? What are we going to hear from him yelling in the corner at Sean Porter in this fight?
I don't know. You know, Bo Mack is Bo Mack. You know, he's unpredictable. He might yell out something. He might not. You know, we got to watch and see.
It's kind of weird watching him yell at Shakur Stevenson, given how much he likes Shakur Stevenson. That was a weird situation there.
Hey, you know, it is what it is. It's a job to, you know, train Jermell to the best of Jermell's ability and, you know, see if he can get that victory.
You're a guy that's moved up in weight several times. What did you think of Shakur at 130? I know you and him have a good relationship as well.
Well, it's nothing that I wasn't telling everybody about Shakur in the past. You know, like I told everybody, you know, he's going to be the next superstar in boxing. I don't see nobody beating him right now.
I thought he filled out really well. I mean, that happens, of course, and it's happened with you as well, but like going up in weight, he looks stronger than he did at 126.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, and he's capable of going up to 135 and 140 as well.
Yeah, that'd be fun to see. A lot of good fights for him at both those weight classes. Terrence, good to talk to you, man. We will see you on the 20th in a huge fight against Sean Porter. You can catch on ESPN pay-per-view. Thanks for joining me, man.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Sergio Mora and Terrence Crawford for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And we will see you late Saturday for a special edition of the podcast after the Crawford-Porter fight.